This is Ed Begley Jr., and you're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara, and worldwide at kpfk.org.
And welcome to KPFK's Arts in Review, celebrating the best in live theater and cabaret in the greater Los Angeles area. I am your host, Julio Martinez, and today I'm happy to be spotlighting the world premiere of Franz Kafka's America or The Man Who Disappeared. We have the writer-director, Diedrich Smith, in studio, as well as the lead actor, Ethan Remes-Cote. So please stay tuned to Arts in Review. And as I said, this is your host, Julio Martinez. Franz Kafka wrote a novelette. It's one I didn't read. I've read other works by him, but I've never read this. I didn't hear about it until I saw this press release. So I'm very excited to talk to the man who adapted it. He's Emmy Award-winning writer-director Diedrich Smith. Are you there, Diedrich?
I am.
Great. And I also have the lead actor in this play, Ethan Remes-Cote. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am. Howdy.
Howdy. So, this is great. I have to ask you, Diedrich, how did this work come to you?
I read the book a long time ago, back in 1990. It was the first Kafka I ever read. I just really loved it. I'd been avoiding Kafka for my 20s. I was a little nervous about Kafka for some reason. I was a voracious reader, but for some reason I was a little nervous to go into what I thought would be depression land. But this book had an energy and a spirit and a comic edge that really spoke to me and was actually very similar to my own writing in a way, the sort of writing that I did myself. So I immediately sort of thought, at the time I was a screenwriter, I thought I want to adapt this at some point. I didn't do it for a long, long, long time. I got involved in theater years later. And ultimately I decided to make a play out of it instead. So that's kind of the origin. But it's always been in my back pocket as something I always wanted to do.
So the Open Fist Theater production is the first time this has been on stage.
Yes. Yeah. We did a staged reading of it like 2 years ago, also at Open Fist. But yeah, this is the first time it's been produced. Yep.
Now, it opened October 25th, so it's currently running through November 22nd, Saturdays at 7 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. at the Atwater Village Theater, which is located at 3269 Casitas Avenue, Los Angeles, 90039. And we're happy to hear your company has offered two pair of tickets to a member of the KPFK family. And that is delightful. I also want to recommend the young man who is playing the lead in this. Ethan, are you there now?
Yes, I am.
So, had you ever been involved with Franz Kafka's works before?
No, I never have. I mean, I was, of course, familiar with him, but I've never engaged this deeply with any of his works.
You did do Bat Boy the Musical. I saw that.
Yes, and as much as that is also Kafka-esque, it feels a little foreign compared to America.
Oh, yes. So how much time did you have to rehearse this?
Well, we were rehearsing for about, I think, 2 months, but we had the script for a little bit longer than that. It has been, you know... I rehearse 6 nights a week with 1 day off. And now that we are in shows, we're just doing performances Saturdays and Sundays.
How many previews did you have?
Well, I believe we only really had one. Now we're in full runs. And I think it's gotten good reviews. So the reviewers say.
So when you previewed it... And finally had an audience. Were you surprised where the laughs were and weren't?
I think it, I mean, as always with every show, an audience changes everything. The dynamics on stage, I think, deepened. The way I played my own character changed. I realized that, you know, I was, you know, being perceived. And of course, that changes everything. And I think, yes, I was very excited to get the laughs, to get the, we got some shocking, you know, some gasps. It was, the audience changes everything. And I think it gave me, and I believe everyone in the cast, some real confidence in the, I think, incredible work that everyone is doing. And hopefully I'm doing as well.
I asked that question because we performed Kafka in this left-wing company I was involved with in San Francisco, and I was wondering if there were laughs in Kafka, but this is great. you're also featuring in this. You have a big cast: Tambri Alsup, Matthew Goodrich, Mark Joblin, Kelsey Kucinich, Ethan Remiscott, of course, Deborah Rothart, Shima Rock, Jake Santana, Jack Sharp, Grace Soans, and Jeremy D. Thompson. That's pretty hefty cast.
It's a big one. Yeah, it sure is. It's 11 people, and they're all playing, except for Ethan, they're all playing multiple roles. So it's pretty exhaustive. They're on stage pretty much all the time. And when they're not, they're changing costumes in their dressing room.
Now, the story is about a young boy, Carl Rossman, at age 17, who arrives in New York on a steamer and strives to make his own way around America, even as he encounters a series of increasingly strange and bewildering experiences that turn his world upside down. Now, Franz Kafka never came to America. So it's an interesting approach.
No, he didn't. It was kind of a fantasy land for him in a way. You know, he always kind of wanted to get out of Prague. He wanted to go to Berlin because that was sort of the Mecca at the time. Prague was, oddly enough, I think, considered sort of an intellectual backwater. But he never did. He never even made that move. So I think America was a place that he was fascinated by. There had just been a book written by, I forget the author, that had a lot of pictures of America and also talked about it. He did a lot of research into it. But I think he treated it as a sort of wonderland. He did have an uncle who had gone there and become successful, and he sort of writes a version of that uncle in the book, although the real uncle was actually kind of a nice guy who helped him out and got him a job. The uncle in the book turns out to be not very nice. But yeah, I think he treated it as sort of an exotic place to go to. That's certainly the way the book treats it. He did a lot of research, but there's things that are odd, and you're not sure why he made those choices. He put a sword in the hand of the Statue of Liberty, and certainly he knew it had a torch instead of a sword. So that seems very definitely an aesthetic choice. But he also refers to the Boston Bridge, a bridge from Boston to New York, which seems a bit fanciful and ludicrous. And one doesn't know if that was a mistake or an intentional sort of fantastical thing on his part. But that seemed to me his treatment of what America was. And that's certainly the way I approached it as kind of this other place, you know, going down the rabbit hole and ending up in this new land.
Well, back in the early 1960s, when I was in the San Francisco mime troupe and we were doing Kafka, the director, Ron Davis, spent 2 weeks giving us a lecture on Kafka and his life. Did you have to educate any of your actors into Kafka's political and social history?
I didn't do that so much. I will say, as a director, I tend not to be a lecturing person. I tend not to be a very talkative person. I do table work with them and scene work, but I kind of dive right into the work itself. I sort of wanted them to approach this as a play. And we sort of went into it pretty directly. So no, I really didn't give a lot of background on Kafka. If anyone asked, I would certainly explain it. And I certainly discussed with Ethan in great detail about the character of Carl, who I think is very much comes from Kafka's own. I mean, it's sort of a self-portrait in a way. But no, I didn't. I didn't. That tends not to be my method. Is to do a lot of lecturing.
Ethan, did you have any problems identifying yourself with Carl?
Honestly, Carl feels incredibly close to myself
Oh.
as a neurotic person, personally. It was very easy to play someone like that. But no, Carl is a very intricate character, I'll say, because he has moments of extreme courage and agency, but it's always for someone else's sake. He's a character who he just takes a beating throughout this play, both, literally and metaphorically. And he's willing to take it, but he is also, when he sees injustice, when he sees something wrong in the world, he is the first one to stand up and say something. He can't help himself. One of the first moments that we get to see with Carl is that he notices that a stoker on the ship he arrives on has been unjustly treated on the ship, and he storms into the captain's office with the stoker and gives a rousing speech as to why the stoker should be treated better. And this, I think, is an excellent framing for who this man is. I mean, he may be young, but he is fiercely withholding to the idea of justice and his own personal ideals. And I think that's a very interesting balance for this kind of, I think, inherently timid character to have.
Now, excuse me, Diedrich. I was reading that Kafka was influenced. This is found very interesting by Charles Dickens.
For this book, he liked Dickens, and in fact, specifically David Copperfield. I think that was sort of the model of a young man kind of making his way in the world and sort of figuring himself out. And I think on those, it's impossible to know where he intended the book to go because he gave mixed signals to Max Brod, who he would talk about it. But at times, it seemed that he really wanted the book to have a happy ending, in the way that Dickens does. It does not, and he sort of it sort of goes down a Kafkaesque road where things get worse and worse and worse. But I think his intention was really to do a big kind of, coming of age book of this young man in a strange place. And so the characters in this, they're similar to the characters in other books, but they also have that Dickensian kind of larger than life quality. They're very funny in a way that I find they become a little darker and more sardonic in the later books. But yeah, for this book in particular, it was a model for sure. And I think maybe because he didn't finish it, I think one of his frustrations was that it was probably not going in the direction that he had planned, again, in that Dickensian vein. But yeah, I think that was his model. And that was certainly the way I approached the show. I sort of told everyone that this is treat this as you would if you were doing Dickens, if you were doing Nicholas Nickleby or any of those sorts of plays, treat these characters in the same way. They're a little bigger than life.
Well, I haven't seen the play. I'm going to be seeing it within the next 2 weeks, but I'm wildly interested in the production design. It seems like this character travels quite a bit, and that's a small stage.
Yes, it is.
How do you manage the scene changes?
With the intention was always to have it this to set to be fairly minimal, and with lighting and sound, basically, it changes fairly automatically. I didn't want there to be pauses. I didn't want there to be breaks between scenes. So he'll be in one location, he'll be out in the country, and then immediately the changes and he's in the middle of a hotel. So this was sort of planned out. And the lighting designer Gavin Wyrick and the sound designer Gary Reisterman have done extraordinary work in terms of making these transitions happen. There, some of them are quite miraculous. In the very beginning of the play, he goes through a door on the deck of a ship, and he emerges into the bowels of the ship, and it automatically becomes that. through just their lights and sound. But that was always the intention all the way through. From the beginning of writing the script, I always knew that it would have to be something that could change location immediately, because it just moves too fast. The play's written pretty cinematically that way. It's a lot of short scenes, and one goes into the next and the next. He's here, then he's there. And that's kind of the fun of it. It was really kind of fun to figure out, okay, how does he get from this place to that place? How do we make that transition happen? So that was kind of the intention. And then I enlisted a friend of mine from my animation days to do some animated sequences that would also bridge between scenes when he travels from one place to the other. It tends to provide those kind of transitions, so that helps as well. It moves. It really moves.
I'm really looking forward to seeing this now. I have to ask. Oh, I have to let everyone know. There's two pairs of tickets available to the KPFK family. If you call 818-985-5735, that's 818-985-KPFK, press 1, and the person who answers the phone is my producer, Donna Walker, and you can get a pair of tickets to this show, which runs Saturdays at 7 p.m., Sundays at 2 p.m. through November the 22nd. I have to ask you, Dietrich, how come only two times a week?
It is a long show. It's 3 hours. And I think the decision was made that Fridays might be a little difficult for an audience to make, and that it was also tiring for the actors themselves. So I think it was sort of to conserve energy is why it's Saturdays and Sundays. And that was a decision made late in the process. That was a decision.
There's only two acts, though, right?
No, there's three acts.
Oh, three acts. Oh.
No, it's old school. I'm really old school. It was really intentional. I miss epic theater. I miss, you know, theater has become, for economic reasons, largely, to a large extent, it's become much shorter. I mean, most plays are 90 minutes. They don't have intermissions. They have small casts. I came of age in the 70s and 80s and 90s when there were, you know, big epic plays. There was Nicholas Nickleby, which I mentioned before, was an 8-hour extravaganza that the Rose Shakespeare Company did, one of my favorite theatrical memories. So I kind of wanted to do this. I wanted to treat this like a big show. So it treats the whole story, and it's epic in terms of the narrative. It's epic in terms of the themes that it's approaching. It's something I really wanted to do, and I wanted to see if audiences still had a thirst for that or not. And I like three acts. I personally kind of like that, those breaks. I wanted for this in particular, there were natural act breaks that came at these two points, and it just seemed to split it in the middle seemed rather difficult, but these two points made perfect sense. And that way, each act is about a little over 50 minutes, which I think then makes it, it's three acts.
Ah, so hopefully you're calling KPFK to get the two free pair of tickets. But if you can't do that, you can also call the theater. You can or go online to www.openfist.org. And to get tickets to this play, America or the Man Who Disappeared. Now, during the closing 10 minutes of the show, I'd like to really find out where you all came from. You, Dietrich, how did you get involved in the arts?
Oh, my God. God, it's so long ago. I grew up in a small town on the Big Island, Hilo, where there wasn't a lot of theater or any of that stuff. I was originally tracked to become an engineer like Carl in the play. I was good at math and science, but on a whim, I applied to the USC Film School and miraculously got in. And so my whole life changed and I went there instead. And then I became a film editor for a while, then a screenwriter. Then I ended up working in children's television animation during the 90s. And then at a certain point, I decided I kind of wanted a break from that. And I joined the Open Fist Theater in 98 or 99. I had always loved theater. From the time I had come to Los Angeles, I'd seen theater. I'd gone to New York. I was a major theater junkie, and I just decided to indulge a fantasy I'd always had of joining a theater company. I took acting classes. I became an actor. I became the literary manager of the company. I programmed lots of seasons of the company. Became one of the leaders of the company. I directed plays for it. It was a wonderful 8-9 years. It was great. So that's sort of my evolution. And I had to stop it for a while working in theater, but it's really been wonderful to come back to it.
What was your first paying job?
My first paying job?
Yeah.
Was as a film editor.
Ah.
You mean my first paying job ever, or you mean in the arts?
In the arts, I mean.
In the arts as a film editor. When I got out of film school, I was an editor for several years. So I edited jazz documentaries. I edited some really low budget features. I edited all manner of stuff.
For which show did you win an Emmy?
For Arthur, I've written many scripts for Arthur, which is a show for PBS. So I've written dozens and dozens and dozens and dozens of Arthurs. It's a good show. And I've won. Yep. The Emmy Awards are all for Arthur. Three.
Ethan, how did you get involved in the arts?
Well, I'm from Los Angeles, and like I believe many people similar to myself, I fell into the bad at sports to theater pipeline. And I kind of never left. When I was a kiddo, I was about 5. My parents realized I had no future playing soccer or baseball or basketball or any of the sort, and so they put me in a kids musical theater program called YADA, which was a lovely, lovely program. I believe it's still around, so check it out. And I did musicals there from the age of 5 till I was going into middle school, basically. And then from then on, middle school, I did musicals and plays all throughout middle school and all throughout high school. I went to LOXA, which is an art school, so I did a lot of acting and singing and all that there. And, you know, then I majored in musical theater in college, and now I've graduated and I, with a BA in theater, and now I'm out doing a bunch of theater, and truthfully, I just love it.
My son went to LOXA too. And my daughter.
Oh, my goodness. Which department? I was in the theater department.
Well, they were both in the theater department.
That's a great department.
Yeah.
I had a lot of fun there. It was a great school.
What was your first paying job?
My first paying job.
In the arts.
In the arts. Oh, my. Well, it goes way, way back. When I was a kid, I was in a fundraiser. It was a show called Beatrice's Goat, and it was a fundraising show. And I was so little, I can't quite remember which fundraiser, but I think I got about $200, and that was my first pay gig, and I was like, this is the most money I've ever seen.
Yes, we all react that way.
Indeed we do.
I want to remind everyone that following Arts and Review is Donna Walker's Pacifica Performance Showcase. And her guests were on the screen, but now I don't see who her guests are. But Pacifica Performance Showcase also celebrates the arts. We are the Arts and Culture Hour. Oh, her guests are Zach Gruber and Tyler Steelman on their film Sallywood about actress Sally Kirkland. That's 2:30 to 3 p.m. today. I want to thank you both. You, Diedrich, and you, sir, Ethan, for being on my show today.
Of course.
Thank you so much. Thanks.
And I look forward to seeing you a week from this Sunday for 3 hours. I look forward to it. And the Open Fist Theater, once again, Atwater Theater, excuse me, is located.
I don't know if we have a show a week from this Sunday. I think our last show is Saturday.
Ah, well, I'll get there anyway.
No, it closes on the 22nd.
Well, I'll look at the schedule.
There's a third performance next Sunday.
Atwater Village Theater is located at 3269 Casitas Avenue in L.A. There's free parking at the Atwater Crossing, just one block south of the theater. And if you can't get tickets through us, you can go to openfist.org. Anyway, this is your host, Julio Martinez. I want to thank my guests, Diedrich Smith and Ethan Remiscott for being here. And I will see you next week for another sojourn through live theater or cabaret in the greater Los Angeles area. Thank you, sirs, and I'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
Alrighty. Thank you for having us.
Yes.
Yeah, thank you. Bye.